On this Hallows Eve, it's time for Tech Talk.
On the 30th of October, 2023, and we are tonight going to be talking about all things Braille with the general manager of the Braillist Foundation, and by day, he's a trainer. But tonight, he's on Tech Talk. Actually, it's tomorrow morning where he is. Matthew Horsbold.
Look, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you for, thanks for letting me be here. I listen to the Tech Talk podcast. It's normally too late for me to be here. I was listening to one of the things that you do every so often. You sort of do a round robin and you ask people, you know, what do you want to see on Tech Talk? And it was Sharon Strokowski, I believe.
Yes.
Who said that she was currently using an Orbit reader, but she wanted an expose of the other Braille displays on the market and how to go about choosing one. And I thought, well, you know, this is a sort of session that I could turn my hand to. So you're kind of seeing the beta test of this session, really. I thought it was a good idea. I proposed it to Larry and the team. They thought it was a good idea, and so here we are. But actually, in writing it, I sort of realized it's kind of harder to write this sort of session than you think it would be. So we'll see how it goes. I'm going to talk for a bit about Braille displays. Basically that, how to choose your Braille display. You know, what are the Braille displays on the market? What are the features that they've got? You know, what are the things to think about? And some of them are really obvious, like how many dollars are you going to spend? And some of them are not so obvious. And we'll just sort of go through them and figure it out. And what I'll do is I'll talk about some Braille displays that I know about. And I know about various Braille displays. So, you know, we should be able to make this work. I'm going to talk a little bit, not too much, about the Braille Note Touch and the Braille Sense 6. I do think it's important to talk about them. I'll talk about the Mantis Q40, the Q Braille XL, the Brailliant BI 20X and 40X, the Chameleon from APH, the Focus 14, 40 and 80, and the Orbit Reader 20, 20 plus and 40. So that sounds like a lot of Braille displays, because it is, but hopefully we'll sort of package it into this sort of nice framework where you won't notice quite how many Braille displays we're talking about until the end. It's not a fully comprehensive list. I'm not going to talk about the Activator from HelpTech. I'm not going to talk about the Vario Ultras from Baumore Visio Braille. I'm not going to talk about the two NLS e-readers from Humanware and ZoomX. I'd like to talk about all of these, but I just haven't used them enough or at all to know, you know, enough about them to be able to sort of give you any information about that, really. The other thing that I'm not going to talk about is the multi-line stuff. So I'm not going to talk about Canute 360 in this, or the Monarch, or the Dot Pad, or, you know, any of those products. We're really just talking about single-line displays tonight. I'm not going to talk about Hable 1, or the Orbit Writer, or the Orbit Speak, because they don't have refreshable Braille cells. They're very good products, and maybe we should talk about them at some other point, but that's not for today. And I'm not going to talk about the Optima, because I'm really excited about the Optima. I think the Optima is going to be fantastic. I think it's going to be a game changer, but they haven't told us how much it's going to cost. They haven't told us when it's going to be released. They haven't told us what the specs are going to be. They've kind of hinted at what they might be, and I believe it is going to come out, and I believe it's going to be a great product, but I can't really talk about a product that doesn't exist yet. So that's why I'm not going to talk about it. If we were doing this session a year from now, I would totally talk about the Optima, but there you are. So yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Thank you for everybody for turning out. We've got stiff competition with Apple tonight, so I'm pleased that you chose to listen to a speech about Braille displays instead of listening to new M3 Mac announcements. So let's just get right into it. We're talking about Braille displays. What then is the difference between a Braille display and a note taker? And why are we talking about Braille displays and not note takers and all the rest of it? So we are talking about Braille displays. A note taker, just to sort of clear up some definitions, typically the thing about a note taker, it's not really a note taker anymore, is it? But it's got lots of features. So it's got a really comprehensive word processor with a spell checker. You know, it's got an email client, it's got a web browser, it's got a diary manager, address list, various other applications. And the aim is to be able to use it instead of a computer or a smartphone or a tablet versus a braille display, which, you know, it has a few features, but not so many of them. And really, it's designed to be used with a braille with a computer or a smartphone or a tablet, you know, to use it alongside it rather than instead of. So just to touch very briefly on the note takers before we move on to the braille displays, we're really talking, of course, about the Braille Note Touch Plus and the BrailleSense 6. And just a few very, very brief comparators, just to sort of, you know, if anyone is in the market for a note taker, they do both run Android. The Braille Note Touch Plus is running Android 8 at the moment. The BrailleSense 6 is running Android 10, soon to be Android 12. The Braille Note Touch has a full, you know, tablet-style touch screen, and that can be useful in an education kind of thing, you know, if you're wanting that sort of thing. And of course, you've got Touch Braille on the Braille Note Touch, which is a lot quieter than the Braille keyboard on the BrailleSense 6, although I don't know how many people actually use Touch Braille. And really, to be honest with you, the touch screen is more trouble than it's worth. The touch screen makes it a lot heavier, you know, very, very significantly heavier, actually, especially when you've got it in its case with the keyboard. The BrailleSense 6 has a much faster processor. Having said that, the Braille Note Touch's web browser at the moment is significantly better than the BrailleSense 6's web browser, even though it's slower. I would be inclined to say that when the new BrailleSense 6 firmware comes out, that may not be the case anymore. I think the BrailleSense 6 web browser is about to get an overhaul, but I shouldn't perhaps say any more than that, other than watch this space. And a few other sort of navigation-y things that sort of make the BrailleSense 6 sort of stand out a bit. So, I mean, we can perhaps come to that in the question and answer at the end. If you are really in the market to, you know, to think about a note taker and you're wondering which one is the best, we can certainly talk about that. But let's talk about Braille displays now. So we're not talking about the Braille Note Touch or the BrailleSense 6. We're talking about everything else that is out there. And we'll start by just, as I say, looking at some factors and working out which Braille displays meet what factors. We'll start with the type of keyboard. So if we think of a Braille display, we're thinking of a line of Braille cells that refresh, that pop up and down. And traditionally, a Braille display has either had no keyboard at all, or it's had a Perkins-style, you know, 8-key, 9-key, whatever keyboard with, you know, 6 keys, a backspace key, an enter key, and 2 space bars or a space bar or what have you. And this is still very common. Most Braille displays still have that Perkins arrangement. But you can now get Braille displays which have a QWERTY keyboard instead of a Braille keyboard, or in fact, you can get one Braille display that has a QWERTY keyboard instead of a Braille keyboard, and that is the Mantis Q40 from the American Printing House, which is manufactured by Humanware. So this is a 40-cell Braille display with a laptop-style QWERTY keyboard. It's a US layout laptop-style QWERTY keyboard. To my knowledge, it does not have an insert key, and some people have used this as sort of a point of criticism and says, well, you know, how can you use a Mantis if it's not got an insert key? Well, what you do is you put JAWS or your screen reader into laptop mode, and then you use the caps lock key instead. All of that works perfectly fine on the Mantis. It's very small. If you think about maybe a 13-inch laptop, you're kind of in the right ballpark for the size of a Mantis. So it doesn't have, you know, home, end, page up, page down, but it does have a function key and it does have arrow keys. So you can do function left arrow for home and function right arrow for end and all of that sort of thing. So obviously this is a very popular thing because you have a Braille display with some built-in, you know, note-taking applications. You can read everything in Braille, but you can type on a QWERTY keyboard. And the other advantage of, say, the Mantis would simply be that the QWERTY keyboard acts like a regular QWERTY keyboard. The computer sees it as a normal keyboard. And hence, even if your screen reader is not running, you can still use the keyboard of the Mantis to bring the screen reader back. Whereas you couldn't do that really on any of the other Braille displays, which have Perkins-style keyboards. We should perhaps talk about the QBraille XL from HIMSS. The QBraille actually came out before the Mantis came out and is a similar sort of size, you know, in terms of surface area. And so I suppose some people who've not seen the QBraille would sort of think that the QBraille is like the Mantis. It's sort of, but not really. What the QBraille does is has a hybrid affair. So it has a Perkins keyboard with, you know, six keys, and it has a backspace key on the left, and it has an enter key on the right, and it has a space bar, you know, all of that. But then around the Perkins keyboard, it has all of the keys that you would expect on a QWERTY keyboard. So it has a control key, an alt key, a Windows, shift, caps lock, tab, arrow keys, home key, end, page up, page down, F1 to F12. They're all present on this keyboard with the sort of QWERTY keyboard, with the Perkins keyboard in the middle. So this is kind of the best of both worlds, really. If you want to press Control S for save, you press the Control key at the bottom left-hand corner, and you press the letter S in Braille, and you do Control S. If you want to do Control C for copy, then you hold down the Control key and you press C. If you want to press Alt F for the file menu, you hold down the Alt key and you press dots 1, 2, and 4, you know, for Alt F. And it's a nice enough product. A few things to mention, though. First of all, the keys are all there, right? Control, Alt, Windows, Shift, Caps Lock, Tab. They're quite small. They're not as big as your typical Control, Windows, Alt, whatever, keys. This took me by surprise when I first saw a QBraille. I thought that it was going to be standard size keys with a Perkins keyboard in the middle, but no, the keys are significantly smaller. This means that when you're trying to do something in particular like Alt-Tab, the muscle memory isn't quite there. You kind of have to think about it a bit. Eventually you'll get the hang of it and it will be fine, but until you get the hang of it, you might find yourself overshooting on the tab key slightly, and you know that could cause a bit of a problem. The Perkins keyboard is not recognized natively, so therefore the QBraille needs to do quite a lot of translation into Braille. So when you type, for example, Matthew with a THE sign, the computer is not going to see what you've typed until you press the space bar, at which point this is all going to come, you know, down the line. Now, this is fine, actually. When you're typing, the Braille translation is good. There's nothing inherently wrong with this approach. What you might find, though, let's say instead of typing the word Matthew, I've accidentally typed the word Nathew because I put an extra dot in the letter M to turn it into the letter N. Well, this is fine, but when I go back to backspace out that letter N and replace it with the letter M, I'm not going to get the letter M, am I? I'm going to get the word more. And so there's a couple of things you can do. You can put it into a mode where that doesn't happen. And there are other reasons why you'd want to do that. If you want to press H to move to the next heading on a web page, for example, you need to put it into a mode where H is going to type the letter H straight away rather than having to press H followed by space and get the word have and, you know, all of that sort of thing. So you can put it into a mode. It is absolutely possible to do it. It just, from my point of view, unless you really want a Perkins-style keyboard with QWERTY functions, you have to really sort of think about, am I in hybrid mode? Am I in not hybrid mode? What am I doing here? What grade of Braille am I in? And you've sort of got to make a decision about, is it worth it to you? For some people, it will be. For some people, Braille is really what you want to do. You want to do Alt-F4 because Alt-F4 is nice and straightforward, but really you don't want to be messing about with a QWERTY keyboard. You just want to be typing in Braille. And it's a very viable, you know, perfectly good product. But you just need to be aware of those sorts of little things around the outside. So there you are. You've either got a QWERTY keyboard the Mantis, you've got a hybrid keyboard, which is the Q-Braille, or everything else, which is a Perkins-style keyboard. So how do we narrow this down further? Well, let's look at the ergonomics of these Perkins-style keyboards, shall we? For if you've got a Braille display that's got a Perkins-style keyboard, the typing experience on each display is going to be different, and it's going to be different in several ways. If we start off by talking about the shape of the keys, and you're looking at a Brailleant or a Chameleon or a Focus, they're going to look a bit like note-taker keys, right? Very traditional, vertical, like rectangular keys. That they fit very nicely on the fingers. It all just kind of works, you know, there's no problem there. The Orbit Reader has almost, not quite semicircular keys, but like, you know, like oval-shaped keys in the horizontal position. And they don't feel bad. I actually quite enjoy brailing on Orbit keyboards, but they do feel different. And if you combine that with the next couple of factors, the configuration of the keys, right? So, for example, the Chameleon and the Braille Note and the Brailleant have two space bars with a tiny little gap in the center. The Focus and the Orbit displays have a single space bar in the center, but the Orbit readers have the space bar above the line of Braille, whereas the Focus and the Brailleant and the Chameleon have the space bars below the line of Braille. So already you're starting to think, right, if you've got small hands, the Orbit keyboard might actually be the better keyboard for the job versus the Focus keyboard where, okay, it might be a bit further away. Not materially further away, and actually I think a lot of people would get used to having a space bar below the Braille display. I certainly did. But it's just something to be aware of. But then on the other side of that, the Orbit Reader 20 and the Orbit Reader 20 Plus, the backspace key, rather than being to the left of dot 3, is to the left of the space bar. And the enter key, rather than being to the right of dot 6, is to the right of the space bar. And that's just on the Orbit Reader 20 and 20 Plus. The 40 doesn't have this strange sort of anomaly. And neither does any other. And I'm not saying that it's a bad thing necessarily, it's just a thing to be aware of. And the other thing to be aware of is the key travel. The key travel on the Brailleant and the Chameleon is significantly shorter than the key travel of the keys on the Focus or the Orbit displays. So just again, something to be aware of. What are you buying your Braille display for? Are you buying your Braille display to read Braille, in which case, you know, the key travel is not terribly important? Or are you buying your Braille display to write Braille, in which case the keyboard is going to be, you know, a huge consideration? Moving away from the keyboard and towards the actual sort of primary component of the Braille display, which is its cells. And how many cells do you need? Well, sometimes how many cells do you need is not really the right question. I mean, the Mantis Q40, it's only available in a 40-cell configuration. You've got 40 cells whether you like it or not. So if you want a QWERTY keyboard, and the QWERTY keyboard is what you want, you're getting 40 cells. If you want the hybrid keyboard, you're also only going to get 40 cells. That's just how it goes. If you're buying the Chameleon, you're only going to get 20 cells. But all of the others, the Brailleant displays, the Orbit displays, they are available in 20-cell or 40-cell configurations. The Focus displays are available in 14-cell, 40-cell or 80-cell configurations. So you're kind of thinking, well, which one do I go for? Well, some of the factors you've got to think about here when you're deciding, you know, if you've decided that actually what you really want is one of the Focus displays or one of the Brailleant displays, but you're not sure how long it's going to be. Well, how much is it going to cost? The longer displays are going to cost more than the shorter displays. That's just sort of the reality of that situation, really. Generally, a 40-cell display is going to be slightly less than double the cost of a 20-cell display. I mean, that's fair enough, right? You double the cells, double the cost, minus a little bit. An 80-cell display is considerably more than double the cost of a 40-cell display. So in the UK, you can pick up a 20-cell display for kind of $1,800. You can pick up a 40-cell display for kind of around about the $3,000 mark, so slightly less than double. But an 80-cell display, you're looking at sort of, you know, $7,000 or $8,000 plus for an 80-cell. So it's a lot more than the sort of $5,000 or $6,000 that you might expect it to be if it was a straight double. Portability. Displays become less portable as they increase in length. What you don't want to do, as I realised, I inherited an 80-cell Braille display off somebody to do some testing with, and I thought, I know what I'll do, I'll take it on the train. Yeah, don't do that. It doesn't fit in your rucksack terribly easily. The person next to you on the train doesn't appreciate it when you get your great big 80-cell Braille display out. You know, a 40's not so bad, actually. A 40 goes into a rucksack quite nicely. But a 40 is not going to go into a handbag, whereas a 20 or a 14 might do. So it depends, you know. Do you only have the budget for one Braille display? Do you have the budget for more than one Braille display? Do you have a Braille display at your desk already? And are you looking for a Braille display that you can take around with you? You know, in which case, maybe actually you don't really care about the cell count because you've got the cell count on the display at the desk. What you care about is it being portable. So, you know, just keep it in mind. What sort of content are you going to be reading on the Braille display? So if you're a computer programmer, computer programmers have historically really liked 80-cell Braille displays because an 80-cell Braille display is a little bit like the length of the window. You know, the console window was traditionally kind of 78 characters, and so an 80-cell display worked quite well. Extensive Braille users on a computer might still favour an 80-cell display, even if they're not a programmer, because you've got more information to fit on the, you know, for example, the control label or the control type or the control state and the status cells and all of that sort of information. So you could have a good sort of 10 cells set aside for that and still have a 40-cell line plus a bit left over. People who are mostly reading books or documents might find a longer display too long, and I'm one of those people. I find that if I'm sat at an 80-cell Braille display, I've got to go all the way over there to start reading it, and then I come to the middle, and then I go all the way over there to carry on finishing it, and then I get back to the middle again. You know, it's too long for just the reading the notes, for example, for this presentation. I don't think I could do it on an 80-cell. I don't think I could do it on a 20-cell either. For me, a 40 is the sweet spot, but you know, you will develop your own habits. If you feel around on some Braille displays, you'll get to grips with the idea that okay, 20 is a bit short, or 40 is a bit long, or what have you. And that kind of goes back into what I was about to say next, which is reading technique. You know, readers will naturally feel more comfortable reading different displays. Some will feel more comfortable on a longer display, others will feel more comfortable on a shorter display. And you can't really say that, you know, oh well, because I'm happy on a 40, everybody's going to be happy on a 40, because it's, you know, it doesn't work like that. Some people will be happier on a shorter. Moving from number of cells to the quality of those cells, you really, really need to try and feel a Braille display before you buy it. I mean, you know, I can do a session like this and I can give you as much information, you know, as I possibly can, but there's no substitute for going around an exhibition and having a look at them. Most Braille displays are using piezoelectric technology, so they're much of a muchness, really, in terms of the underlying technology. They all refresh at about the same speed. They're all about as quiet as each other, all of that sort of thing. They've all got this slightly sort of spongy texture to them. That's fine, you know. Orbit displays do not have this. Orbit displays use their own technology. The Braille quality is a lot crisper, often called signage quality Braille. But the rest is, you know, piezoelectric. So you're kind of sat there going, well, if they're all piezoelectric, what's the difference? Well, the pins, for a start, the pins on the focus displays are not quite as proud, and they're not quite as rounded as the pins on the Mantis or the Chameleon or the Brilliant or indeed the Q-Braille, or at least they're not in my experience. They're just a little bit sort of more, they're a bit thinner, they're a bit more watery. Some people prefer that, some people don't, but you've got to go and feel it for yourself. And what are the cell caps like? So the cell caps form the reading surface, if you like. It's kind of the background, the thing that, you know, that's not paper, but the closest as you've got to the reading surface. So they're quite smooth on Mantis, Chameleon, Brilliant displays. They're actually quite rough on the Q-Braille. And if you've felt a Braille Sense 6 or something, you know, they really are kind of quite rough. And the focus kind of lies somewhere in the middle. So what do your fingers prefer? Do they want a rough texture to read on? Some fingers do, some fingers don't. You know, do they really care? And as I've already said, the Orbit Reader is the Orbit Reader. I mean, that's its own technology. And I actually find the Orbit Reader Braille is too proud. But it's really good if you're learning Braille. I know a lot of people really like the Orbit Braille. At the Braillists, for example, well, on the Braille for Beginners course. The controls on a Braille display are really quite important. All Braille displays have controls. You need to be able to move the Braille display. You need to be able to pan it from left to right. So when you've got to the end of a display width, you need to be able to move it to the next width. You need to be able to move to the next line of text on the screen. You need to be able to move around the screen. You know, Braille displays have got controls, you know, in order to do all this. But they're going to be different, and you'll find that you prefer a certain type of control. So I grew up using a Braille Note Classic and latterly a Braille Note M-Power, which had the HumanWare thumb keys on. So I've got used to using a Braille display that has thumb keys. So the Mantis has thumb keys, the Chameleon and the Brilliant, that, you know, they all have thumb keys. They have four of them. And that's really all that they have, apart from the Brilliant BI40X, which has three extra navigation keys down the left-hand side of the display and three down the right. But the 20X doesn't have those, and the Chameleon doesn't, and the Mantis doesn't. So you really, I mean, you're restricted to those four thumb keys for controls, which is really quite impressive, really, when you think about it. Compared to the Q-Braille and the Orbit, which don't have thumb keys per se, but they do have panning sort of rockery things at either end of the Braille display, and some people quite like that. And the Orbit displays also have a sort of D-pad. They have up, down, left, right arrows, and an enter button sort of in between dots 1 and 4 on the Braille keyboard. So you could use that to go to move the cursor, you know, left a character, right a character. You know, you can use it for navigating menus in the operating system and things like that. Focus displays have the most amazing array of controls. They have, I've never seen so many controls on a Braille display. They have nav rockers at either end of the display. So they're like your panning rockers, but you can control what those panning rockers do. So do they move by line or by sentence or by paragraph? And they're at either end of the Braille line. And then on the front of it, you've kind of got thumb keys. You've got panning buttons. You've got panning rockers. You've got shift buttons and selector buttons. And you sort of look at this huge assortment of controls and you think, my goodness, how on earth am I going to learn all of these controls? But the reality of the situation is that they're so well defined. And I'm not a fan of Focus Braille. And I make no secret of that, but Focus controls, the Focus keyboard and Focus controls, absolutely fabulous. And they're so well defined, they're so tactilely different from one another. And the level of control that it gives you over the screen reader is just absolutely phenomenal. So, you know, if you can cope with a poor reading experience and you actually want that level of control, and sometimes people do, sometimes you'll be using that Braille display to control, you know, the computer from a distance, you'll be using it as a remote control while you're doing presentations and things, and that could be a factor. And all of the displays have cursor routing buttons. I nearly didn't talk about those because they're so ubiquitous, apart from the Orbit Reader 20 and the Orbit Reader 20 Plus, which doesn't. You might also, while we're talking about controls, in addition to the type of control, you might want to consider whether the controls are registered when they're pressed or when they're released. So when I press the thumb keys on my Brailliant, when I press the thumb key, nothing happens. When I release the thumb key, something happens. Now, if you compare that to the nav rockers on the Focus, when I press the nav rocker, something happens. And this moves on to the next thing. If I hold down the nav rocker, something continues to happen. So I can use the nav rocker on the Focus to scroll down something very, very rapidly, which is not a feature that is offered by the Brailliant or indeed many other Braille displays. It seems to be fairly unique to the Focus, really. But it's worth having a good play with those controls. And it's worth having a good play with those controls in environments, in all of the environments that you're going to test on. Try using the Focus with iOS, for example, and just hold down one of the nav rockers and see how quickly you can get from the top of a screen to the bottom of a screen. It's really quite incredible just how seamless that whole experience is. Of course, connectivity is a big thing. All of the displays that we're talking about support USB. Most of them have a USB-C connector at the Braille display end, apart from the Orbit readers that don't. They have micro USB, and I think the Q Braille also might be micro USB. All of the displays support Bluetooth. I would not get het up about what version of Bluetooth it supports. You know, okay, the Focus only supports Bluetooth 4.1 or whatever, it might even be 3 or something. It supports a very low version of Bluetooth. The Brailliant BI40X supports Bluetooth 5. Does it really make a difference? Not really, I wouldn't have thought, unless you were a very, very far distance away or, you know, in a very, very built-up area. I think that the Bluetooth version is not so terribly important. What is important is the number of Bluetooth devices that you can connect to at once. Most of them, you can connect to 5 Bluetooth devices at once, and you can switch between them relatively easily. The Orbit Reader, you can pair with multiple Braille displays, multiple devices, I think, but you can only connect to one at a time. So if I was connected to, say, my phone and my iPad, I would have to turn Bluetooth off on my phone in order for the Orbit to connect to the iPad or something like that. I'd have to do a lot of faffing around, whereas on the Focus or the Brailliant or the Mantis or what have you, it's connected to all of those devices at once, and I can just press a button and it will, you know, move on to the next to the next device in the list. The Mantis and the Chameleon and the Brailliant do have built-in Wi-Fi. It's worth knowing about it. It's fine. It's used to access the online libraries, and it's used to set the clock and to upgrade the firmware. But that's all it's used for, so don't get too excited about it. And although all of the displays that we're talking about do support being connected to the computer to transfer content, again, don't get too excited about it. When I very first saw the Brailliant and I thought the Brailliant could do, you know, you could transfer content to it and everything, I thought, well, wouldn't this be wonderful? You could run a portable copy of NVDA on your Braille display, and, you know, you could take your Braille display anywhere and you could plug it in and this portable copy of NVDA will work. Sadly, it doesn't. It's either using mass storage protocol, as in the Focus or the Orbit, which means that you can run a portable copy of NVDA off it, but you can't use the Braille display at the same time, so you've just got speech. Or it's using media transfer protocol, where you can use Braille and transfer content at the same time, but not robustly enough for you to run a portable copy of NVDA. So yeah, there are limits to what you can do with file transfer, really. There's still no substitute for the good old-fashioned pen drive. Compatibility, just a note really to say that the Mantis and the Brailliant and the Chameleon don't yet support Android. So if you're looking to work with Android, don't get one of those displays just yet. Any of the others should be fine. Apart from that, it's all much of a muchness, except Actually, with JAWS, there are some quite interesting differences between how the Braille displays work with JAWS. For example, the Focus and the Brailleant displays, you can do full, modifier key emulation. You can do any combination of Control, Alt, Windows, Shift, Function keys, JAWS key. You can do all of that in a way that I don't think you can do on any of the other displays that we're talking about here. And some displays, if you look at the Orbit Reader, you can actually type in Grade 2 Braille, but you have to put it into a special typing mode, whereas you don't have to do that on the Focus or the Brailleant, for example. Talking about the built-in features of these displays, I wouldn't buy them for the built-in features necessarily. You want to buy it as a machine that can control your or work with your computer or your smartphone. But the built-in features can be useful for taking notes. The Focus displays and the Orbit Reader 20 have a very, very basic no Braille translation in at all. So you can open text files and they'll show in computer Braille. You can open BRF files and they'll show in contracted Braille if that's what they were set up in. And you can create notes and you can save them as BRF files. And if you've got Braille translation software on the computer, you can back translate them into text. But that's really about all you can do on the Focus or the Orbit Reader 20. The 20 Plus adds Braille translation. So you can still only work with text documents, but it does add Braille translation forward and back, which makes it a lot more useful, and a few other features, a calendar, a clock, and a few things like that. The Mantis and the Chameleon and the Brailleant displays kind of take that to the next level, really. A bit like the Orbit Reader 20 Plus, but you can also open Word documents, PDF files, you can read DAISY text, you can access to online libraries, all of that sort of thing. There's a basic calculator. And the Brailleant displays also, because there's a speaker on the Brailleant displays and the Chameleon, but I don't think the Chameleon's quite got this far yet. The Brailleant displays support DAISY audiobooks as well. I wouldn't recommend it, by the way. If you're buying a Brailleant display because you think you're going to use it to listen to audiobooks on a regular basis, you'd be very disappointed. Buy it because it's a good Braille display with good Braille, but don't buy it because it's a good talking book player. The QBraille has a lot of features. I haven't used a QBraille in a long time, so I don't really want to say what features it's got and what it hasn't got. I think it might have an Excel viewer in it. It's a very, very comprehensive setup, really. It's almost like a note taker in a Braille display, but not quite. A lot of displays, if you can load files onto them, have external storage. So the Orbit displays, the Mantis, the QBraille, the Chameleon, and the Brailleant BI20X, but not the 40X, all support standard SD cards. The Mantis, the Chameleon, and the Brailleant displays also support USB accessories, so memory sticks, external hard drives, external card readers, all of that sort of thing. The Focus displays only support micro SD cards. So then we're just into things like what sets the Orbit Reader apart from everything else, really. The refresh rate and the refresh loudness, which is much of a muchness on all of the displays apart from the Orbit, really. I wouldn't get too het up about the refresh rate on the Orbit Reader. A lot of people say it refreshes quite slowly. It does in comparison with piezoelectric Braille displays, and there's no getting around that. Of course it does. But I think it's probably not as slow as people would want you to think it is. It can generally refresh in about half a second. And, you can, once it's refreshed a little bit, you can start reading what's on the Braille display. So with practice, you can get into quite a good rhythm of reading on the Orbit. I wouldn't worry too much about the refresh rate. But the refresh volume is the problem. It sort of makes a purring noise, like a moth almost, as it goes across. And you need to be careful of that, because if you're making presentations, if you're still up at a conference, if I was reading my notes for this presentation, for example, off an Orbit Reader, you would know about it and it would become a distraction in a way that it isn't a distraction listening to another, you know, more, you know, standard Braille display, if you like. And of course, the price. Orbit readers are substantially cheaper. So if you're just buying a book reader and you want an entry-level Braille display just to read some books on and you don't really care about the refresh noise, then Orbit readers may be a good choice for you just because they are so cheap. Unless, of course, you're fortunate enough to have one of the NLS e-readers, in which case perhaps the e-reader is where it's at. The final thing I want to say, and then I'll open it up for questions, is just a nod to the fact that the Brailliant displays and the Chameleon displays have text-to-speech in them. And I say it's a nod to it. It's a bit like what I said earlier on about audiobooks. Don't buy a Brailliant BI40X or a Brailliant BI20X because it's going to be an excellent audiobook player, because it isn't. And in the same way, don't buy a Brailliant BI20X or 40X or a Chameleon 20 because it's going to have excellent text-to-speech. It does its job, and as an extra, you know, as a bonus kind of feature, a Braille display with text-to-speech, it's a bit of a novelty. It can be quite useful sometimes navigating around the menus and setting options. I do have the text-to-speech turned on, and I do use it, but it's not really why you've bought it. You know, you've bought a Braille display to be a Braille display. So I wouldn't let the text-to-speech sway you one way or the other. I wouldn't buy it because it's got text-to-speech. I wouldn't not buy it because it's got text-to-speech. I would use it as a value add, but that's all it is a value add, really. It's not a core feature because it's not the speaker quality is not terribly brilliant. And the text-to-speech only reads in certain parts. It reads the menus, it will read in the editor, it will read in the book reader, but it won't read, for example, in the BRF editor or anything like that. So that there are definitely still times when text-to-speech doesn't work. If you really want a text-to-speech interface, you want to be looking at either the Orbit Speak, which I said I wasn't going to talk about, or you want to be looking at a traditional, you know, Braille note taker like the Braille Note Touch or the Braille Sense 6.
Okay, it looks like Dawn is first.
You're a man after my own heart. I grew up with Braille notes and now I have my Brilliant, and I switch and I had to go from a 32 cell to an 18 all the way to a 40. And I can tell you, I thought going from a 32, you know, to a 40 was going to be an issue. And it's really not. There's a friend of mine that I'm helping. She got a Brilliant BI20X. Like, she got it from somebody. The problem is we're trying to figure out if it's going to work with the Amazon Fire tablet. And it's the HD 8th, I think 8th generation. And we're trying to figure out if it's going to work. It has a micro USB on it. Yeah, first of all, can that be connected with her BI20X display? And if so, how can we get it connected? Because that's the only display she has.
I should say, we're not blessed with terribly good resources, you know, finances in the UK either. You generally get it through something called Access to Work, which is, I guess, kind of like Voc Rehab, although not quite the same. Or you would get Braille displays because you were a student, or because you saved up a lot of money. But yeah. We're not rich in Braille displays in the UK. And I think the only reason why it's easy for us to say go and see them is because the UK is a lot smaller. So I'm thinking, for example, what you could do is go to a CSUN, or you could go to an ACB or an NFB convention and to the exhibit hall, and you could see them there. Which you can do, but you have to be in the right state, I guess. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I do take the point. In terms of the Fire tablet, I was hoping no one would ask me about those because I don't know. We did do a session at the Braillists on Amazon Fire tablets, and I would send you in that direction. If you go to braillecast.com and you do a search on like Amazon Fire, that will bring up a session that actually Ben Mustill-Rose did on the Fire tablet, and he will show you how to connect an Orbit reader to a Fire tablet. Now, what I would suggest you do is follow those steps, but use the BI20X and see if it connects. I don't know whether it will or not. The question is whether the Fire tablet will support HID Braille, and I don't know whether it does. If anybody else does, I'd be really interested. You know, stick your hand up and tell us.
Like, do you think Humanware would know, or do you think Amazon would know, or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, both of them would. I mean, that would be the other thing to do, wouldn't it? Yeah, call Humanware and say, does it work? And if they don't know, I mean, there's probably a list somewhere on the Amazon website of the Braille displays that are supported, or like, you know, is there an accessibility at Amazon.com? I mean, I don't know, but there is definitely an accessibility department at Amazon. So, yeah, by all means, Amazon or Humanware, one of the two ought to know the answer to that question, I'd have thought.
Okay, Tracy is next.
Oh, do you know anything about the Vario Ultra? I know it used to be called, you know, it had the other name, but sometimes I find a lot of the Braille displays that are coming out now have too many features.
Yeah, so the Vario, I do know about the Vario, and it was always called the Vario Ultra, but the company changed. So it was made by a company called Baum. Baum were a German company. They had a US office for a while, I think. It was Baum USA. And they went bankrupt a few years ago, and they were bought out by another German company called Visio Braille. And you can still buy the Vario Ultra 20 and the Vario Ultra 40, and they are some of the nicest Braille displays I've ever had the pleasure of working with. Absolutely gorgeous Braille cells. The controls are whisper quiet on them. The keyboard is a joy to type on. I mean, it really is just a lovely, lovely, lovely unit. And I mean, if anyone's got a Vario Ultra, I'm very jealous of them. Now, you see, the thing is, what it's not doing so well is keeping the firmware up to date. So, for example, the UEB translation tables in the Vario Ultra are now quite dated, and there's a lot that's been fixed in the translation tables for LibLui and things like that that have just never made it into the Vario Ultra. And that is a concern to me, if I'm completely honest. If you're not even keeping your translation tables up to date, you know, how seriously do you take this product? And there's not a JAWS driver built into JAWS for it, so you have to go and download a JAWS driver from the Baum or Visio Braille website. And it kind of works, you know, it does most of what you would expect a driver to do, but there are just little bits sort of rough around the edges that don't work quite so well. And I would really like them to work, but there just doesn't seem to be much from Visio Braille going into keeping the software up to date and keeping the drivers up to date. And that worries me because the displays are not cheap. You know, they're probably, I mean, look, when the Brailliant BI40X first came out in the UK, it was 2,600. At that time, the Vario Ultra 40 was clocking in at more like 4,000 or something. You know, it's extremely expensive. And if you're going to spend that amount of money, I would want really seriously robust firmware and drivers.
Yeah, it's very good to hear. Sorry, it's very good to hear that because in the past, I've played with one a bit and I really liked it. But knowing that they are keeping up with the firmware and software and stuff, it's good to know that. Thank you.
I mean, they haven't gone bankrupt yet. You know, they've still got time. they might keep up with it eventually, but I'm not seeing it at the moment. And until I see it, I'd struggle to recommend it.
Yes, I understand. Thank you.
Okay, Carla, you're next.
I want to know about things like, you know, if things like the new JAWS split Braille, you know, if the note takers in terminal mode can do that. And also, how do they compare? Are these displays fairly universal when it comes to things like language tables, status keys, and 8-dot Braille and things like that? I know that's very complicated and long, but I'm curious.
Well, it's not as complicated and long as you might think. So when you have a Braille display connected to a device, so it could be connected to a computer or it could be connected to a phone or a tablet or whatever it's connected to, the Braille display goes into a dumb terminal mode, essentially. So the Braille display is not doing anything other than receiving information from the screen reader. So it receives information from, say, JAWS or from VoiceOver or from whatever the thing happens to be. And it's transmitting information. When you press keys, it's transmitting what key presses you pressed. And that's literally all it's doing. And so the screen reader is then responsible for dealing with that. So, you know, if you press space with G to change Braille grade, it's not actually the Braille display that's doing that. It's passing that keystroke onto JAWS that is saying, oh, I need to update the Braille grade. And then JAWS will update the Braille grade, which means that, well, every Braille display has slightly different keystrokes because every Braille display has slightly different keys. And that is a problem. And there's not really an easy solution to that problem. But it does mean for things like language profiles and 8-dot Braille and all of that sort of thing, these are all screen reader features. So if it works with one Braille display, it's probably going to work in a very similar way with all the other Braille displays. But what you might find is that it works better on Windows than it does on iOS, for example. And you can't guarantee that, well, yeah, just because my Braille display is in grade 2 on Windows doesn't mean it's going to be in grade 2 on iOS. You've got to set it up, you know, for every device that you connect it to. But once it's set up for the devices that you're connected to, if you bought a new Braille display in the future, it's already set up and it will all work in sort of, by and large, kind of the same way. It's no problem. You also asked about split Braille. theoretically, split Braille works with all, I think, is it all 40 cell displays and up? Now, that would exclude the Braille Note Touch and the Braille Sense 6 and so on, because they only have 32 cells. So I suspect they won't work with split Braille. But yeah, the 40 cell displays should. I think there are one or two 40 cell displays and up that don't, because they're still waiting from, you know, for input from the manufacturers. But yes, anything that's 40 cells or above should work with split Braille. And if it doesn't at the moment, it should do soon.
Yeah, when we talked to Ryan last Wednesday on Main Menu, he said they were still working with HumanWare to get that fixed, but they expected it to.
Yeah, and that's because I said before about how different Braille displays have got different controls, right? So there's a thing. Screen reader manufacturers can't really be held responsible for knowing about every single control on every single Braille display. And so some things that are very advanced, like split Braille, get delegated out to the manufacturers. And the manufacturers, the Braille display manufacturers, are basically told, look, there's this new feature coming out in JAWS. Here are what we need keystroke assignments for. Could you go ahead and give us some assignments? And really, I mean, that's what that boils down to, is that Vispero don't know about every single key on every single Braille display. So they've delegated that out to the manufacturers, and they're just waiting for manufacturers to come back with the answers.
Okay, next is a phone user on area code 518.
Probably Mary Beth.
Yep, you're absolutely right. It's Mary Beth. And thank you so much, Matthew, for getting up in the middle of the night to come and talk with us. And as a person who has a Vario Ultra, I think your assessment was great. The question I had was, and I should probably know the answer to this, but as I'm sure you know, some Braille displays will allow you to reassign, you know, the keys on the display. Are there any of them that do that besides the Baum ones?
Yeah, well, thanks for your question, and thank you for your assessment of the Vario Ultra. I'm glad it aligns with mine. If you'd come along and said, actually, they released a firmware update the other week, what are you on about?
Oh, no.
I might be feeling a bit small right about now. Yeah, okay.
They're dead on arrival,
so,
sort of. There we go.
Yeah. So reassigning.
And I like them.
Yeah, they are gorgeous, aren't they? But reassigning the keys.
Yes.
Okay. So it depends what you're trying to do. This age-old problem, isn't it? I think the focus displays now allow you to reassign the panning buttons. The humanware displays definitely do. The Mantis, the Chameleon, and the Brilliance definitely allow you to reassign the order of the thumb keys.
Okay.
There was, and there may still be, a bug with that particular thing. A couple of the thumb keys were the wrong way round. And if you know about it, you just put them in the wrong order and it sorts it out, you know. But there was a problem. Mm-hmm. But you can certainly do it. The question is, to what extent does that reordering apply? So, for example, technical terms, they don't use them at Humanware anymore. They've renamed them and I've forgotten. The old terms for the Humanware thumb keys were previous, back, advance, and next. And I can't remember.
Okay.
I think they call them previous, left, right, and next now. They've given them slightly better names, but you know, growing up with previous, back, advance, and next, you sort of get used to it. Anyway.
Me too.
So you've said, right, okay, I want the previous thumb key to do the next thumb key. And I want the back thumb key to do the advanced thumb key. So I've got them all swapped over. So instead of going previous, back, advance, and next, it's now going next, advance, back, previous, right? So next is on the left and previous is on the right. Now the question then becomes, when you connect that up to JAWS, if I press the left thumb key, is JAWS going to be told that I pressed the previous thumb key? Or is JAWS going to be told that I press the next thumb key? And that is not standardized. Most Braille displays will tell JAWS that you pressed the previous thumb key, even if in its software the thumb keys had been swapped round.
Wow, that's so interesting. Thank you. I've only done it in panning, but that's so interesting. Thanks.
Yeah. So what it means is, you have to swap them round on the Mantis or the Brilliant or what have you, and then you have to go ahead and also swap them round in JAWS. But it's not standardized. It would be entirely possible for some Braille displays not to do it that way. And so you just kind of have to be a bit careful when you've got a display that you're not used to just, yeah, swap them round in one place first and see how it works before you swap it round on the other.
Okay, next is area code 614.
And I don't know if you mentioned this at the beginning, and I may have missed it, but I heard a presentation the other day on the cadence. Have you had any experience with that yet?
I haven't. I've heard about it. When I say I've heard about it, what I really mean is I've heard that it exists. I don't know anything about it. What I think I do know is that it's a multi-line Braille display of sorts, or is it a modular Braille display or something? It's a prototype, I know that, and it's a very exciting prototype, potentially.
It's little, though. I don't know if it could be multi-line, because I thought the person said that you could actually carry it in your pocket.
Yeah, and I might be getting two products confused because there's some other thing that's coming out. I think,
well, everything I've heard so far, they haven't mentioned a price. They keep saying, you know, they try to help you get funding for it. And
yeah,
so
they haven't mentioned.
Thought it was interesting.
That's it. They haven't mentioned a price, and I don't think it's actually released yet, is it? I think it's still in prototype. It might be in a fairly advanced stage of being in prototype, but. Yeah, no. I mean, I'm just waffling, really.
Thank you. I won't take up any more of your time on it then.
I don't know enough about it to comment, really.
Thanks so much for your presentation tonight.
That's no problem. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your question.
So, Matthew, if people would like to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Sure. By email is probably the best way to do it. I say this as somebody who's pretty terrible at replying to emails, actually. So, I mean, if you send me an email, I mean, you're probably going to be waiting a week or so before I get back to you. And I'm sorry about that. I would love to get better at email. If anybody has any tips for getting better at email, and wants to present a tech talk about it, that might motivate me to stay awake to listen to it.
I was going
to
say, don't sleep.
Yeah, right, exactly. So probably through the Braillists would be the best way to do it. So I'm Matthew, MATTHEW, dot Horsepool, HORSPOOL, at Braillists.org. Braillists is BRAILLISTS.org. And Braillists.org, I mean, Braillist has a slightly different meaning in the UK to in the US. Braillist just means Braille user in the UK. And so Braillists.org is our Braille users organization. And there's a lot of very interesting stuff out there.
Does the Braillist Foundation have a website, he asked?
Well, of course, it's just Braillists.org.
There you go. Okay, so if people want to know more about the Braillist Foundation, that's one way to do it.
Indeed.
And thank you very much. You were terrific. It was exceptional, and I enjoyed it.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure being here, and I have no idea how late it is, but it doesn't feel late at all. So thank you. Thank you so much for the opportunity, and thanks to everybody for the wonderful questions.
Myrna Vota, would you unmute and tell us about Stocking Stuffers Part 1, which is next week? We have for years done Stocking Stuffers, which is a way for us to let the vendors exhibit their products for a half hour each, so that if you want to buy something for Christmas, from a technology perspective, mostly, but not always, you have that chance. And we're starting that next week and for the next 3 weeks. Myrna?
So it's time again. It's time again, guys, this year. We didn't do it 1 year and everybody complained. We're a stocking stuffer. So we've done it. So we're starting off with AT Guys. When I wrote to JJ, well, actually I wrote to staff, and JJ answered back and said, I want to take the first one. I want to be the first one. So JJ is going to be the first one. And now I have to remember who's in it. I think it's Katie White.
No, she's the last week.
She's the last
along
week.
Along with Guide Lights and Gadgets.
Yeah, I don't have my schedule, unfortunately. So I know who it is. It's a gal that Andrea got a hold of, Charlotte Lang. And Charlotte Lang does jewelry. So she's new. What Andrea and I tried to do was we tried to get people you know, we don't want to have the same people every year. We do have a couple of people that are the same, because if we don't have a couple, we have a couple of people on here who would cry if we didn't have like Denise from Speak to Me. So we are going to have some of the people we've had last year, just two, and the rest haven't been here for a year. So AT Guys wasn't there last year, so we've asked them to come. Katie White is new. She's coming. Yeah, you're right, Larry. She's coming the last week back. Larry got a hold of her, and she's not a tech person. She does vacations and cruises. So as I say, Charlotte Lang does jewelry. And then along the way, we're going to have Rochelle Gomez from San Francisco Lighthouse from the store. She's going to talk to us. And then, as I say, we're going to Speak to Me. And Denise has been here for many, many times. And then our old friend Barry Scheuer is coming back with Guide Lights and Gadgets, the gadgets part of it and the bags part of it. And Barry has a lot of stuff that he's doing, so he wants to come. So we're letting him come. And that's about it. We're gonna have 3 weeks of it. We're gonna have six vendors. So you tune in and maybe you'll find something that you either want to give for Christmas or that you want to get for Christmas.
Very good. Should be fun. Myrna, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks to Matthew again, and thanks to everybody else who's been with us tonight. Join us next week for Tech Talk, the Stocking Stuffer Edition.